The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page with the cover story article. The headline, Namaste, y'all. Indian corporations step up their overseas expansions, and the Raleigh-Durham area reaps the benefits. And the actual article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, The Rise of the East, Indian Corporations Flock to Triangle, North Carolina. And this is written by Lauren K. Onasorge. The pursuit started with a memo from a state senator in early 2017. An Indian information technology services firm had Wake County in its crosshairs, 500 jobs on the line. Project Element, which had already visited other states when Senator Jay Chaudhuri got involved, wanted to be close to customers. It wanted access to talent. It wanted, Chaudhuri would insist, the triangle. It just didn't know it yet. They just did a visit to Indiana, Chaudhuri wrote to North Carolina Department of Commerce officials that February. I'd like for us to clearly lay out why we are a far more superior place to do business. At the time, the state was chasing bigger projects, such as the 1,200-job Credit Suisse expansion in Wake County and the 2,250-job Allstate Insurance project in Mecklenburg County. But officials lobbied the Indian firm hard, a full-court press, Commerce Secretary Tony Copeland would say. By July, they had a deal for a whopping 2,000 jobs. Element, soon revealed to be Infosys, would become one of the largest projects in Triangle history, a banner win for commerce in a year where nearly 3,600 jobs were announced in the region by foreign firms. And it signaled a growing opportunity for the state, as interest from Indian companies has eclipsed even that of Chinese firms, officials say. Indian firms are finding us, says Chris Chung, CEO of the North Carolina Economic Development Partnership, the state's lead economic development agency in charge of recruiting for new jobs across the state's 100 counties. But what may be the most encouraging for the Triangle and North Carolina is not necessarily the creation of direct jobs, but the potential of further strengthening the entrepreneurial ecosystem. According to the National Foundation for American Policy, more than 50%, 44, of the 87 startups valued at $1 billion or more were started by immigrants as of 2016. Out of that, 14 were started by individuals from India, the single largest group among all countries. The theory, as experts explain, is that when Indian workers are moving to the Triangle with big companies such as Infosys and HCL, at some point a handful of them will leave those enterprises and start their own ventures, and most likely they would start those in the Raleigh-Durham area. Economists say the Triangle is in prime position to keep being found and to lure the bulk of that investment coming to the state. But the importance and influence of Indian corporations on North Carolina started way before the recent wave of job announcements. One led to another. In 2008, Rahul Singh, who heads up Indian IT firm HCL Technologies' massive Cary campus, visited 7 cities in 6 days before picking the Triangle. In 2014, he'd spearhead another aggressive search, this time for where to locate a 1,237-job expansion. Cary became an easy choice, Singh recalls, pointing to the college-driven talent pool and the proximity to customers. Today, the firm has 1,500 employees in the town. A year after HCL's big announcement, Aurobindo Pharma, another Indian firm, saw an opportunity of its own in Durham, announcing a new research and development headquarters, 275 jobs, and a $31.7 million investment. Within a month, it would disclose plans to scoop up a former Teleflex manufacturing plant for $2.9 million. Just last year, Indian technology firm Sensar picked Durham over competing sites in Georgia, Texas, Indiana, and California for its first North American customer delivery center, a 300-job project. And those are just 3 companies, part of what economic developers have described as a pattern. Indian investments have created a total of 4,000 jobs in North Carolina, according to state records. And Indian opportunities are increasing, with thousands of jobs pledged from Indian companies that have yet to be delivered. Virtually all of it is earmarked for the Triangle, data from North Carolina Commerce show. Of 14 Indian companies out of 100 Indian firms surveyed by the Confederation of Indian Industry in the state, 71% are in IT, though pharma opportunities are increasing. Singh says the talent pool has been the area's biggest asset to HCL, but the ease of doing business has influenced its decision to keep investing. The personal commitment of leaders in the state that help us build a good business case and story for North Carolina, he says. North Carolina's advantage. A.D. Amar, a professor of management at Seton Hall University, says factors have worked in North Carolina's favor for some time. He points to the state's weather and low cost of living as reasons it might be favorable to other locations in the U.S. for Indian investment. Indians feel very comfortable in the U.S., says Amar, a native of India who came to America as a student. It's the language, it's the democratic system, the sense of freedom they enjoy in India. They can enjoy in the U.S. There's a lot of overlap. Economic factors are also at work, as India, like many places, is seeing a shortage of qualified people, he says. Cost of labor is on the rise. So they find the advantages they enjoyed in India to produce pharmaceuticals and other products for the U.S. market less attractive now than it used to be in the past, he says. It's becoming more attractive for the American market. Amar, who led the Indian Americans for Trump PAC in 2016, credits the Trump administration with recent increased interest, too. With Trump's stance on strict visa limits, companies are increasing their in-country hires out of necessity, he says. Ranil Hira, an associate professor of public policy at Howard University and research associate at the Economic Policy Institute, agrees that political pressure and arm twisting have been leading to investments. He theorizes that Trump's H-1B stance factored into Infosys's decision to announce its plans to bring 10,000 jobs to the U.S. And Raleigh, where Infosys is planning to locate at least 2,000 of those jobs, can capitalize on that interest, both with its talent and incentives packages, Amir says. But the state's biggest selling point might be the companies that have already come here, like Infosys and HCL. Every company that locates in North Carolina makes a big headline in India, Amar says. Maureen Little, Vice President of Economic Development at the North Carolina Community College System, says companies can be the state's best recruiters. In selling prospects on the custom training programs the community colleges can offer, her team often connects firms with companies such as HCL and Infosys that are already using those resources. Hearing that from other companies, that's really where the rubber meets the road. That's where the sale of North Carolina and the sale of customized training and our community colleges is critical, she says. Strengthening the ties. Officials say it's hard to visualize the scope of the actual opportunity. That's partially because while EDPNC has foreign direct investment offices in locations such as China, Japan, and South Korea, no such office exists in India, even though the country has an astonishing 1.3 billion people. The status quo in North Carolina has been that the opportunities find the state, not really the other way around, Chung says, but that may soon change, as India tops the priority list when it comes to FDI funds, he says. The next step in that strategy is, how do we more proactively go after those companies that may be thinking about U.S. expansion, he says. It's probably the biggest priority when it comes to that overall business recruitment aspect of what EDPNC does. Even without the FDI office, North Carolina ranks 16th among all states when it comes to Indian investment, with nearly $64 billion invested so far, according to the Confederation of Indian Industry, CII. Chung believes that once North Carolina starts acting proactively, the opportunities could increase tenfold. Out of 100 Indian companies surveyed by CII, the group found $17.9 billion had been invested in the U.S. overall, culminating in more than 113,000 jobs. Chung wants a bigger piece of that pie. Without an FDI office, the distance can be challenging, as it can literally take days for scouting executives to reach North Carolina without a nonstop flight. And EDPNC handles the bulk of its Indian dealings from its Cary office. While there are plans to recruit a flight to China, at this time there are no such plans for India. Mike Landguth, CEO of RDU Airport Authority, says it comes down to airline opportunities which just aren't there. We've looked at it, he says, noting that for now RDU is focusing on markets with established infrastructure, such as its long-sought China flight recruitment effort. If the situation changes, we'll look again, he says. For now, the straightest shot may be RDU's nonstop flights from London and Paris. And Landguth says those flights and the connectivity to other international markets that they bring can boost economic development pitches, including those to Indian firms. Incentives and visa-heavy workforce. Jack Narcotta, a senior analyst with Strategy Analytics, predicts investment will flow both ways. Narcotta, who has covered mobile devices for multiple research firms, says that while the U.S. has largely gone through the 3G to 4G transition, there's potentially a billion users coming into more advanced handsets, and that's just one market where U.S. firms can benefit from Indian investments. He says it's likely that companies in North Carolina will discover more opportunities in the future, and that increased awareness through investments here could fuel that interest. India, he notes, doesn't prompt the same IP concerns as when technology companies invest in China. There's a good mix, a customer base that's really hungry for new devices and new technology, he says, predicting more synergies between the two regions in the years to come. To win projects, North Carolina will likely have to stay competitive with its incentives packages. Metros across the U.S. have become more aggressive in recent years, says site selection expert John Boyd with the Boyd Company. He calls incentives a necessary barrier to entry when it comes to making an economic development shortlist in 2018. But Howard University's Hira questions the ethics of using incentives to lure in these firms, particularly those in IT services, the arena that includes both Infosys and HCL. Hira says the practice of offshoring is integral to the business model. An IT services firm outsources a company's IT department, moving it to a call center in India where labor is cheaper, he says. It's a move that displaces U.S. workers and one, he says, shouldn't be subsidized through incentives in North Carolina. Even if they're saying they're hiring locally, they're going to be doing some of the delivery from offshore, he says, adding that just because they've been arm-twisted by the Trump administration into hiring U.S. workers, that doesn't mean they're not offshoring a lot of the work. It's their business model. And public records confirm that, even as Infosys hires in North Carolina to fulfill the promise it made last year, it continues to file applications for H-1B visas in the Triangle. The company saw 121 labor condition applications for H-1Bs approved for fiscal 2018 in Wake and Durham counties. HCL was approved for 755 and Cenzar for 126. Cisco led with 1,087. So why would you subsidize this with incentives, Hira says, of Indian IT services firms in general? Through the recently passed budget, Republican lawmakers tried to address the visa issue, inserting a provision that would disallow H-1B visa holders from being counted toward milestones of transformative projects. But it's not just incentives, it's also talent that lures companies to the Triangle. Little says that's true of all projects, not just those coming from India. Little says the state needs to make sure it has a ready population, and that means identifying those who are underemployed and bringing the training to them. In addition to luring new projects, the community college system needs to ensure that people know about opportunities in sectors such as technology and how its resources can help connect would-be employees to new skills, she says. HCL Singh says companies such as his are already feeling the talent strain from the growing technology cluster. A decade ago, HCL was getting 10 to 12 resumes for every job opening. Now it's closer to 4. They have multiple options, he says, of job seekers. We are facing competition now, and with Amazon and Apple considering the area, I personally feel this is going to be a challenge. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. NCCU scientists prep to market new diabetes diagnostic tool. At risk for diabetes or high blood pressure? Researchers at North Carolina Central University have developed a new way to find out. It's a simple diagnostic test that looks for genetic mutations that raise a patient's risk for such diseases. And according to NCCU, Dayami Lopez, associate professor of pharmaceutical sciences, has applied for a patent for the test she developed at the university's Biomanufacturing Research Institute and Technology Enterprise, BRITE. Lopez and her research assistant, Quantil Melendez, who earned her doctorate in integrated biosciences from NCCU this past December, have worked on the test and plans are to eventually take it to market through a spinoff called NIFP Technologies that Melendez will lead as CEO. We started out investigating why patients of minority ethnicities were developing type 1 and type 2 diabetes after being given generalized treatment for high cholesterol, Melendez told Biz in an email. That led us down the diagnostic avenue as we looked for the mechanism that was creating that particular caveat. From there, we were able to develop insight into why their treatment was being mismanaged, and that was lack of genetic evaluation. Physicians were not recommending minority patients for genetic evaluation, but were treating them on a trial-and-error basis, she said. Without specific genetic information, insurance won't pay for non-standard treatments, such as PCSK9 inhibitors, which work well in lowering cholesterol without side effects, Melendez added. We knew if we could create a diagnostic tool that didn't need stringent prerequisite approval from insurance companies, that we could bridge a gap in treatment. Durham trumps Raleigh in this list. Here's another booster for the Triangle's overall economic development dream. Pay attention, Amazon. The Triangle's largest cities have been named in the top 20 best-run cities in America, according to the data crunchers at WalletHub. In efforting to measure the effectiveness of local leadership, WalletHub set out to determine a city's operating efficiency, in other words, how well city officials manage and spend public funds, by comparing the quality of services residents receive against the city's total budget. The group considered a quality of services score made up of 35 metrics grouped into 6 service categories, including financial stability, education, and safety. The group then measured those against each city's per capita budget. Durham, with a quality of city services score of 26 and a total budget capita score of 12, ranked number 7 overall in the U.S. Raleigh, with scores in those respective metrics of 20 and 28, placed number 16 overall. Broughton UNC alum Reed adds to Hollywood hits. Ant-Man and the Wasp, the latest film in Marvel's superhero saga, made its box office debut and raked in $76 million in its opening weekend. The movie was directed by Peyton Reed, a Raleigh native and UNC Chapel Hill alum. Reed was born in Raleigh in 1964 and attended Broughton High School before pursuing higher education at UNC. Reed studied film at Chapel Hill, where he was also active in student television and worked as a music DJ for WXYC, the student-run campus radio station. Following Reed's graduation in 1986, he moved to California to pursue his dream in the film industry. Reed has directed a number of movie hits, including Bring It On, 2000, The Breakup, 2006, starring Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn, and Yes Man, 2008, starring Jim Carrey. The Ant-Man sequel beat its predecessor, which Reed also directed, by $19 million during the weekend debut. In North Carolina, construction jobs remain the most dangerous. Farmers, repair technicians, and construction workers have the most dangerous jobs in North Carolina, a report from Term Life to Go reveals. Those specific jobs are included under the umbrella labeled Natural Resources, Construction, and Maintenance in the report. The data, collected from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, was used to determine which jobs result in the highest number of work-related deaths in each state. In the Old North State, 66 deaths occurred in the natural resources, construction, and maintenance arena in 2016. Of those, construction jobs accounted for 30 workplace deaths. Overall, North Carolina had 174 workplace deaths per 1,000 people in 2016. An LLC buys a $5.5 million home, but who will live in it? A Raleigh mansion has sold for $5.5 million to an LLC. The home is located at 1624 Morning Mountain Road. It was among the most expensive homes listed for sale when the deal closed July 3rd. While the deed record doesn't divulge the buyer's identity, the LLC that's listed, Morning Mountain Holdings, is registered to the same address as Eli Global's current Durham headquarters. The company didn't immediately respond to questions related to the mansion sale, but it recently bought an office complex near Research Triangle Park for $16.2 million that will serve as its new home. Maybe Greg Lindberg, the company's founder and chairman, thought it was time to buy a new home, too. Local designers weigh in on architectural brilliance. Biz asked a few local designers to reveal some of their favorite architectural creations on which they have personally been involved. Here's what they had to say. The Wolf Ridge Student Housing Complex for my alma mater, NC State University. The sheer size of this project, over 400,000 square feet, and the five-year design and construction schedule was a huge investment of time for our firm, but well worth it. And that was Catherine Peel, principal of LS3P Associates. Gary Klein, the president and managing partner at Klein Design Associates, PA, says, the Peace Street project, 417 apartment units over a 48,000-square-foot Publix grocery with 750-car parking garage. And finally, Scott O'Brien, a principal at Lord Eck Sargent. The Georgia Public Health Laboratory, a very interesting project in which the design, function, budget, owner, architect, and contractor all came together very seamlessly to achieve a building that ended up being exciting, functional, interesting, and beautiful, I think, and influential. It works inside and out. And now we turn to the On Tech, Transportation, and Finance page written by Lauren Onasorge. Sentenced to 32 years, Aircord appeals. Less than 24 hours after being sentenced to 32 years in prison for orchestrating what the feds have called an extensive bank lien theft scheme in the Triangle, Greensboro's Xavier Milton Aircord, through his attorneys, has filed an appeal. His lead attorney, Raleigh's Rosemary Godwin, declined to comment on his behalf after the judgment July 9. The feds had accused Aircord of a complex scheme that involved converting real estate sales into, quote, valuable assets such as gold and recording studio equipment, unquote. Indictments detail allegations involving multiple properties in Raleigh, Durham, Wake Forest, Cary, Charlotte, and Holly Springs between 2013 and 2016. In one incident, he allegedly forged a deed on a foreclosed home in Raleigh owned by an out-of-state landowner, then channeled the ownership through fictitious individuals and a holding company before taking its title and attempting to secure nearly $500,000 in home equity loans. After orchestrating the sales of properties he didn't actually own to unwitting third parties, he would cash out, the feds say, then do it again. Aircord was found guilty of 10 counts of bank fraud, 2 counts of engaging in monetary transactions involving criminally derived property, and 1 count each of aggravated identity theft and aiding and abetting back in March. He was also ordered to pay nearly $1.6 million in restitution and to forfeit a $300,000 stash of gold bullion the feds found hidden in a Texas storage unit. The appeal is dated July 10. Macy's notifies 2,300 North Carolina residents of data breach. Cincinnati retailer Macy's notified more than 2,300 North Carolina residents this month that they'd been the victim of a data breach. In June, the company noticed an anomalous pattern, login pattern on its retail websites, and according to the disclosure it filed with the state, they jumped into action, freezing accounts until passwords were changed. In the case of Macy's, the retailer doesn't think the attacker got login credentials from the company. Instead, their investigators believe they may have come from the dark web, perhaps from a breach at another firm. And there are plenty of incidents that could have resulted in just such an information disclosure, as according to the North Carolina Attorney General's office, Macy's was just one of 551 companies to file data breach notices with the state in 2018. As of July 10, at least 1,284,749 North Carolinians had been impacted by those breaches. From January 1 to July 10, and actually we'll stop there as it just leads to a grid that goes into a lot more detail. Durham's East End connector is on track. A connection between the Durham Freeway and Miami Boulevard, improving access to I-85 and I-40, is just over a year away from completion, officials say. The East End Connector, a very visible project to 147 commuters, is on track for its late 2019 completion date, says Mara Ibarra, NCDOT Division 5 Senior Assistant Resident Engineer. Drivers may notice some overnight lane closures and other alignments in the traffic pattern as crews work on the massive bridges that remain between them and the finish line. Right now, we're doing columns, setting girders, Ibarra says. The 3.9-mile, four-lane freeway is a big deal, expected to promote economic development in northern counties by better connecting them to the Triangle and its airport, project proponents have said. Frontier's rapid growth propels partners' business. So far this year, Denver-based Frontier Airlines has announced 18 new flights out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, including some such as Syracuse, which debuted this month. But is it too much too quickly? Not according to the airport or Frontier's ground handler, Charter Express. Through May, Frontier had grown its RDU and plane passenger count by nearly 158% over last year. The growth, which has increased Frontier's RDU network to 27 connections, means jobs for Charter, says Byron Oliver, president and CEO. Charter, which also serves Allegiant, Alaska, JetBlue, and a handful of other charter services at RDU, has had to hire 20 people in recent weeks to keep up with the Frontier's increased demand. And more jobs are coming, says Oliver. For Frontier, its crews handle upstairs and downstairs. They serve the ticket counters, man the gates, and load bags onto ramps, and they're busier than ever before. For some time, their largest customer has been JetBlue, which, while not serving quite as many destinations, has planes taking off at a more frequent clip. But Frontier is adding more flights all the time, Oliver says. It's about dead even. But in the skies, the growth is translating to concern, at least if you ask Frontier's group in the Airline Pilots Association. In a July 2 note to pilots, ALPA's captain, Tracy Smith, said union leaders believe Frontier is mismanaging the operation and making it impossible to sustain the overly optimistic flight schedule and aggressive growth plans. And finally, in a section called He Said It, they are still in discussion phase with us and other areas adjacent to intermodal. And that's from Norris Tolson, CEO and president of Eastern North Carolina Economic Engine, Carolina's Gateway Partnership, talking about companies considering the region for expansions and relocations. He says multiple projects' interest levels have been heightened since train giant CSX decided to locate an intermodal terminal in Rocky Mount after all. And now we turn to On Life Sciences, written by Jennifer Henderson. Failed merger keeps BioCryst in the Triangle. There will be no deal as shareholders of Research Triangle Park-based BioCryst Pharmaceuticals have blocked the company's proposed merger with Exton, Pennsylvania-based Idera Pharmaceuticals. BioCryst now is responsible for reimbursing Idera $6 million for related expenses. Previously, major BioCryst shareholders have publicly opposed the planned merger, citing factors such as an undervalued BioCryst asset, lack of consideration of other alternatives, and a disproportionate benefit to one shareholder. BioCryst is a great company. We enjoyed the opportunity to do the integration planning with them, says Robert Duty, Idera's Vice President of Investor Relations and Corporate Communications. Clearly, we think very highly of their lead asset, and we certainly wish them all the success in the world. BioCryst recently initiated a Phase 3 clinical trial of its lead drug candidate, BCX7353, for the treatment of hereditary angioedema, or HAE, with the trial ultimately putting the company one step closer to U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval for the drug in a market slated to top $2 billion. Had the BioCryst and Idera merger gone through, the plans were to headquarter the combined company in Exton and consolidate a research center in Birmingham, Alabama, moving another public company out of the Triangle. BioCryst declined to comment further on the termination of the merger agreement, but company management is expected to address the development at the next earnings call with analysts. Relias adds heft to C-suite with strategy exec hire. Relias has added a new member to its C-suite. The Cary-based company has hired Daniel Reiser as its chief strategy officer. Reiser joins Relias from Bridgewater, New Jersey-based Synchronos Technologies, where he also served as CSO, and saw the company's revenue climb from about $100 million to more than $500 million during his tenure. He replaces Mike Mutka, now CEO of Cary-based Straightaway Health Careers, a sibling company of Relias also owned by Bertelsmann Education Group. I'll be focused on corporate strategy, says Reiser, adding that his role includes continuing to grow the company. Through a spate of recent acquisitions, Relias has expanded its focus from online training for the healthcare field to include analytics and assessments as well. Relias added about 150 employees to its roster in 2017 to a total headcount of about 670 employees as of earlier this year, and the company is also awaiting the completion of its new headquarters at Perimeter Park next year. Reiser says he'll also focus on the company's e-commerce business, alliances and partnerships, and merger integration. "I don't see the inorganic element slowing down anytime soon," says Reiser. Just last year, Relias named Dr. Sandhya Gardner as its first chief medical officer. As Relias moves from basic compliance training to a much more clinically oriented focus on helping organizations reduce their variation in care and helping people get healthier, having her clinical expertise is extremely important, Relias CEO Jim Triandaflu said earlier this year. Prior to Reiser's time at Synchronos, he served as chief operating officer at Durham-based Motris City and also as a strategy consultant and partner at the likes of Accenture, KPMG Consulting, and IBM Business Consulting Services. Surgical robot maker plans growth in Durham. After shelling out close to $6 million last year for a 60,000-square-foot building in the Triangle Business Center in Durham, Sunnyvale, California-based surgical robot maker Intuitive Surgical has purchased 6 acres adjacent to the property for $1.35 million. Intuitive, which makes the Da Vinci surgical system, already has an outpost at NC State University Centennial Campus, but its new Durham digs put it just a few miles down the road from another surgical robot maker, Transenterix. While Intuitive's Da Vinci surgical system was cleared by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration back in 2000, Transenterix just received clearance for its Senhance surgical robotic system on October 13. Intuitive made both its recent building and acreage buys from Indiana-based Scannell Properties. Intuitive reported total revenue of about $3.1 billion last year, up from about $2.7 billion the year prior. Contract developer Avista wants to buy more entities. Amid continued growth, Durham-based contract development and manufacturing organization Avista Pharma Solutions has its sights set on more acquisitions, according to CEO Pat Walsh. "We're very opportunistic looking at additional acquisitions," says Walsh. "Having made 3 acquisitions in 3 years, Avista's always looking at what could be number 4 or number 5, he says. "We're looking at it if there are ways to expand both inside and outside the U.S., says Walsh. Avista currently serves upward of 300 pharmaceutical, biotechnology, and animal health companies globally. Through the first half of 2018, year-over-year revenue is up 51%, says Walsh, with organic growth at 36%. Avista does not disclose specific revenues. Avista acquired the GMP contract manufacturing development and animal health services business of Synexis back in 2015 and subsequently moved its headquarters to Durham. At the time, Avista had about 90 employees, while its headcount has since topped 300. And finally, UNC Rex plucks High Point Regional CEO for COO job. High Point Regional's CEO will head operations at UNC Rex Healthcare. UNC Rex said July 10 that it selected Ernie Bovio, 50, as its new chief operating officer effective September 2. Back in October, Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center said that it had signed a letter of intent to acquire High Point Regional Hospital from UNC Healthcare. And earlier this year, a leadership transition plan was announced, naming Dr. James Hoekstra as Bovio's successor. "There's a tremendous amount of capital investment that will be made over the coming years to continue to meet the needs and create more access for the community," says Bovio of his future role at UNC Rex, including building the new hospital in Holly Springs. Bovio will replace Sue Sandberg in the COO role at UNC Rex. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Ben Graham. First headline, Apex developer files suit in 1,000-acre dispute. A developer has filed a lawsuit against the town of Apex, claiming the town's zoning code is stripping the company of its ability to plan and build mixed-use development on 1,000 wooded acres around the intersection of US 1 and NC 540. Hudson Realty Capital, the New York firm behind the long-delayed Veridea development, claims in the suit that a town ordinance approved in 2011 specifically for the project has actually worked against it by giving power over the future of the project to a single intermediary. That person, Raleigh real estate developer Tom Hendrickson and his company, Lookout Ventures, was hired by Hudson Realty Capital to represent the company to the town and oversee the project. In 2011, Hendrickson worked with Apex officials on behalf of Hudson Realty Capital to draft a new ordinance called the Sustainable Development Conditional District that gives more flexibility to developers in exchange for environmental protections and other concessions, according to the suit. But written into the ordinance was language that created a position called the responsible person, a role that gives just one individual the power to submit plans and make development decisions before the town. The position was included on the insistence of the town, the suit alleges. The new zoning code went on to state that the person in this position couldn't be removed by the developer. Hendrickson filled this role for Hudson Realty Capital, but as the years passed, his vision for the development diverged from the company's, the suit states. The company fired him as asset manager of the project in 2016, but because of the ordinance approved 5 years earlier, Hendrickson is still officially the responsible person for the development and is the only person who can file plans or communicate with the town. Hudson Realty Capital now says it's stuck in a situation in which it no longer has control over its own property. Plaintiffs bring this action to reassert control over their property, to receive confirmation from this court that the town cannot give a third party control over how they use their property, the lawsuit states. The company made four unsuccessful bids to get town council to amend the ordinance. While no progress has been made on the development, the costs have piled up. To date, Hudson Realty Capital claims it has already sunk more than $85 million into buying the land and planning for its development. And because of the ongoing dispute, the company hasn't been able to find interested buyers and developers for the project, the suit claims. Hendrickson didn't respond to calls for comment. Microsoft partnering with Duke in downtown Durham Center. Microsoft is teaming up with Duke University on a new research partnership that will result in the tech giant creating an innovation hub at the recently overhauled Chesterfield building in downtown Durham. The 5,000-square-foot space, slated to open by the end of summer, will put Duke researchers next to Microsoft employees, allowing for collaboration on a number of research areas related to healthcare and machine learning. The partnership is around healthcare science, the application of data, science to health, says Lawrence Karen, Duke's vice provost for research. The partnership also allows the university to capitalize on Microsoft's cloud computing platform, Azure, using the service to advance healthcare research and educational programs. The initial lease term for Microsoft at the Chesterfield is 3 years. The former Leggett & Myers Tobacco Company building underwent a $128 million overhaul led by developer Wexford Science and Technology and opened last year. Existing tenants include Validic and Duke researchers from the Schools of Medicine and Engineering and the Duke Clinical Research Institute. The 286,000-square-foot building is now 89% leased, with announcements coming soon on new office and retail tenants, says Justin Parker, Senior Director of Development at Wexford. Office rent in the Triangle continues to establish new records. Looking to rent an office in the Triangle? Get ready to fork over some serious dough. Office lease rates are continuing their rise to historic highs across the region, surpassing $25 per square foot at the halfway point of 2018. A year ago, the average rate was a little more than $24 per square foot, and as low as $20.50 in 2015. That is according to a new report from commercial real estate firm JLL, which paints a picture of an office market that continues to see strong interest from tenants even as new buildings come online. Part of it just has to do with the pure demand we're seeing for the Raleigh-Durham market, JLL research analyst Ashley Rogers says. The high prices also reflect a new generation of office development in the Triangle, Rogers says. The market, once dominated by standard suburban office parks, is today seeing a new kind of office construction that provides all the perks that startups and tech entrepreneurs covet. A decade ago, we didn't have offices like North Hills and the Dillon that were in the market, Roger says. Now we've got these super amenitized buildings that are coming online, which helps attract talent. $40 million project coming to South Durham. A Charlotte developer has begun construction on a 300,000-square-foot project just off U.S. 15501 in South Durham that will transform a vacant lot into a mixed-use development with apartments, offices, and retail space. Dubbed University Hill, the development is expected to cost more than $40 million and will be next to a stop on the proposed Orange-Durham light rail project, according to developer Hawthorne Retail Partners. Site work has already begun. The firm is targeting an opening at some point in the fall or winter of 2019, says Schaffner Allison, a principal at Hawthorne Retail. The project spans 15 acres at 3806 University Drive and belongs to a separate ownership group, he says. O2 Fitness has already signed on as a tenant, taking up 30,000 square feet for a fitness athletic club. Looking for a mortgage in the Triangle? You're in luck. For many Triangle residents, getting a mortgage doesn't seem to be much of a problem. Five of the counties that make up the Triangle region have much higher rates of successful mortgage applications than the rest of the state, according to a study from financial analysis website Smart Asset. The analysis looks at borrowing costs as well as the ease of getting a mortgage, calculated as the ratio of mortgage applications to mortgage originations. Each county rated strong in terms of the percentage of people who are successful in their mortgage application. Topping the list is Orange County, where more than 66% of mortgage applications were successful. And the rest of the list, Wake County loan funding rate, 64.91%, Johnston County loan funding rate, 62.84%, Chatham County loan funding rate, 62.51%, and Durham County loan funding rate, 62.32%. Now we turn to On Restaurants and Retail, written by Dathan Kazuk. 2018 Trends in the Restaurant Industry. With half of 2018 already in the books, Triangle Business Journal thought it was time to ask a handful of local chefs what trends they've seen come to fruition in the first 6 months. From certain types of foods that have been seen, more light on local menus to a focus on fermentation and pickling, these five chefs share some of their insights about the Triangle restaurant industry. Clayton Anderson from Whiskey Kitchen in Raleigh. Food-wise, it's cauliflower. That stuff is everywhere. It's on everyone's menu. It's prepared in a myriad of creative and delicious ways. Business-wise, it's all about being local. Chefs and consumers are much better educated than in the recent past about local food distribution systems. This is increasing the demand for and assuring the future of supply of locally produced goods, not just produce, but also naturally raised livestock and handcrafted treats of all shapes and sizes. Awareness that it takes a whole community to support a local food distribution system is certainly a trend I am happy to see continue. Teddy Diggs from Coronado Pizza in Chapel Hill. A big trend for restaurants in 2018 is offering clean flavors and well-balanced dishes by using more farm-fresh ingredients. Restaurant menus have a decidedly more vegetable focus to them, and chefs are allowing great produce to be the star of the plate, leaving the diner nourished and feeling good after a meal. I believe this approach to food is trending throughout society, and restaurants are rightfully following suit. Christopher Prieto, Prime Barbecue in Knightdale. Because of the rise in popularity of Instagram, I've noticed a trend of restaurants wanting to create a signature environment so that followers can recognize a location simply based on a quick post. Instagram is also quickly becoming the best social media platform to view the crazy creations from up-and-coming chefs. People all over are searching for the unique, beautiful, and messy sandwiches captured in these shots. I myself have a sandwich named the Full Nelson, specifically created for this purpose. Andrew Smith, Buku in Wake Forest. I'm liking the direction food trends are taking this year, with a growth in fermentation and pickling. I've always loved things like kimchi or quick-pickled daikon for Asian cuisines and, of course, our house sauerkraut. We also preserve and pickle local tomatoes, cucumbers, and much more in order to enjoy local produce during the colder months. We even create hot sauces with chili peppers from our chef's gardens that we enjoy year-round. Think global, eat local. Lionel Vatnay LaFarm Baker Bakery, Cary. One of the most important trends in our industry taps into something that is fundamental to everything we do at LaFarm Bakery, ancient and heirloom grains, where there has been a steady increase in accessibility and interest. We work closely with local farmers and millers for all of our whole wheat and rye flours and feature a special grain every quarter. Earlier this year, we introduced a sourdough made from einkorn, the most ancient of all grains, and now we're celebrating the heirloom rice that has been grown in the Carolinas for centuries, Carolina Gold Rice from Anson Mills. Again, local breweries bring home prestigious prizes. The annual U.S. Open Beer Championship just released its list of 2018 winners, and the Triangle came home once again with more hardware to prove that the beer being produced in our state is top-notch. A grand total of 377 medals were awarded to breweries from South Carolina to South Korea, more than 6,300 beers representing more than 110 different styles competed in this year's competition. And here's a list of the local winners. 1323 R&D for Dunkel Bock Gold and Mexican Lager Bronze. Bryce's Brewing for That Boy, a bronze. Crank Arm Brewing, Rickshaw Rye, a gold. Bike Lock Bock, silver. And Motivator, bronze. Little City Brewing, Dry Irish Stout won the gold. Mosaic Reprise won the bronze. Lone Rider, Cowboy in Black, gold. Goldie's Big Bock, silver. Linwood Brewing Concern, Putintang, bronze. Mason Jar Lager Company, Midnight Excursion, gold. Raleigh Brewing Company, The Toll, a bronze. And White Street Brewing, Scottish Ale, silver. New Raleigh Food Court offers choices for every curious palate. The Morgan Street Food Hall will open on July 23 with over 20,000 square feet of space catered to foodies. Similar to Napa's Oxbow Public Market or Boston's Faneuil Hall Marketplace, the food court will feature over 20 vendors offering just about anything for the palate. And that was the initial concept of founder Neal Hanley of Hibernian Hospitality. The Morgan Street Food Hall will feature some of Raleigh's elite food trucks. Names such as Cousins Maine Lobster, Oak City Fish and Chips, Sassoul, Carol's Kitchen, and Raleigh Rawl will operate inside the food hall. Hanley wanted a place for many to congregate and try an assorted mix of the area's eclectic local food offerings. Those include the Chocolate Bliss of Freddie and Nicole McIntyre's Coco Forte, and the handcrafted burgers of Cow Bar Burgers and Fries. It will also feature an indoor-outdoor bar that will feature local beer and savory wines. And later in the year, the hall will introduce an outdoor gin bar. And finally, in a section called He Said It, we created a healthy dish using the North Carolina School's guidelines and offered this in our restaurant and found that it created a delicious way for us to engage our guests in this important issue impacting children across our state. And that's Sean Fowler, executive chef at Mandolin, on working with the North Carolina PTA to raise awareness about North Carolina school lunch. As a board member of the Interfaith Food Shuttle, Fowler was able to donate proceeds from this to the Backpack Buddies program. And now we turn to On Business Trends, written by Ryan Haar. Hazing deaths lead to tougher laws in many states. The earliest known death by hazing in North Carolina was in 1912. A freshman at UNC Chapel Hill, Isaac Rand, bled to death after an incident that ended with him cutting his throat on a broken bottle. Three individuals were found guilty of manslaughter. Legislation recently passed in Louisiana charges offenders with a felony for hazing that results in death, inflicting serious bodily harm, or consuming life-threatening levels of alcohol. Guilty students could face up to 5 years in jail. Most hazing laws are weak. Louisiana's was very weak until now, says Hank Neuer, author and researcher of Hazing as an International Human Rights Abuse Issue. Now it's both symbolic and a statement by the people of Louisiana that extreme hazing is a criminal act and must be punished accordingly. Neuer believes that while the new law will give prosecutors some teeth, it won't end hazing in the state. No single law can stop all abuse, he says. However, the Louisiana courts now have change or else powers. There were barely any hazing laws in the United States until 1978. North Carolina's current hazing law, passed in 2013, the law defines hazing as to subject another student to physical injury as part of an initiation or as a prerequisite to membership into any organized school group, including any society, athletic team, fraternity, or sorority, or other similar group. Guilty parties receive a Class 2 misdemeanor. While fraternal hazing often takes center stage, Neuer says that it's far from the only type. It's extremely common in high school athletics, he says. Sports camps, buses, and locker rooms are usually the settings for these offenses. Varsity and club sports, sororities, and honoraries all have been known to haze as well, according to Neuer. But as you can see from the hazing list, the greatest danger of death and crippling injuries from hazing, that's in male fraternities, he says. Finally, UNC to start work on new surgical tower. It's been 2 years in the making, but UNC is finally set to break ground in September on its new seven-story, 335,000-square-foot surgical tower. The tower is expected to be complete in early 2022. The site plans were first approved in July 2016, and design approval was given at the UNC Hospital's Board of Trustees meeting in March. The building will sit on Manning Drive across from the Cancer Center, directly in front of the NC Memorial Hospital, the campus's main building, which opened in 1952. Well, when the project was first proposed in 2016, it was estimated to cost $177 million, but was only planned to top out at six stories, with 150,000 square feet. The estimated cost of the project has ballooned to $290 million. To fund this project and others, the state approved UNC issuing up to $250 million in new bonds. We're using a combination of debt and capital reserve to fund the rest of the project, says UNC spokesman Alan Wolf. The new tower will replace the 24 operating rooms in Memorial Hospital and will increase their size. Average operating room size in the old facility is 450 square feet. This will be upgraded to an average size of 660 square feet, with some ORs reaching 1,000 square feet. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the Editor's Notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "This is the perfect time to help local existing businesses." One day last week, I was having dinner with one of the most prominent business executives in the area who has sold two companies in the past 10 years for more than $1.2 billion and is now well on his way to building his third company into an industry powerhouse. Inevitably, like almost every conversation and every business event in town, we started talking about Apple and Amazon and our chances of landing either of those prominent jobs-heavy projects. But something came up in the middle of the discussion that gave me pause as we began discussing existing businesses and the stress on the area's skilled workforce. The point that was being made is this: when the economy is humming with ultra-low unemployment rates, despite a gradual increase in labor participation, it will be the small businesses that will most likely suffer in terms of margins because of higher wages, benefits, and cost of recruitment. So rather than offering billions of dollars in assistance to Apple, Amazon, this should be the perfect time for municipalities to reach out to local companies and try to offer some stress relief. Because if we don't allocate our taxpayer dollars deliberately after considering a long-term impact, these are the scenarios that most likely will play out in the Triangle. I say this with confidence because history often shows us the future. When the economy slows and eventually stalls, the shedding of jobs is likely to be severe because of the wages. While Apple, Amazon, and other mega-billion-dollar corporations will be able to spread the restructuring pain across the globe, most small businesses in Raleigh, Durham, and Cary will have to cut from their only place of operation. Bigger companies will buy local companies during the downturn because of value. When you're hurting for liquidity, it is hard to be aggressive on the deal table. Almost all mergers and acquisitions during a down GDP period result in facility closure, operation relocation, and loss of jobs. The incentives we offered to many of these large corporations that promised thousands of jobs will be clawed back because of failed pledges. Yes, it saves the government from doling out free dollars, but could those tax incentives have helped local businesses who may have hired those additional 10 or 15 workers? There is an argument that is true. We do not know how these companies that promise all of these jobs and are granted millions of taxpayer dollars are going to fare down the road. But when it comes to local businesses, there is a little more operational certainty. In terms of revisiting, reworking, and strengthening our policy to help local and existing businesses, this is a perfect time to do just that. But who's leading that charge? CompTIA, an information technology trade group, reported just days ago that the number of IT jobs at U.S. companies across all sectors of the economy dropped by 90,000 in June, the fourth straight month of declines. Employment within the IT sector, however, continues to rise. This tells me that wage gains are gnawing at profits and rising inflation is a reality. Let's explore new options during the good times, because during tough times, we will be busy trying to save people's livelihoods. And now in news from around the state, Fresh Market announces plans to close 15 stores. The Fresh Market Incorporated announced July 9 that it plans to close 15 of its approximately 160 stores in Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Tennessee, Virginia, and Wisconsin. The Greensboro-based supermarket chain made the decision after an organizational analysis and careful consideration of the company's growth strategy and long-term financial performance. The announcement said the company does not expect more store closures in the foreseeable future. Over the last 8 months, our company has been executing a turnaround plan, and we've seen great progress, said CEO Larry Appel, who was hired in September 2017. However, for a variety of reasons unique to each retail location, that progress is not evenly distributed, and as a result, we have decided to close these long-term underperforming stores. The only North Carolina location slated for closure is in North Charlotte. Owned by Apollo Global Management, a private equity firm, the Fresh Market is in a battle with Whole Foods, now owned by Amazon. And finally, from the Triangle Business Journal, we'll leave you with the ACBJ Business Survey Pulse. The question, are you looking forward to the second half of 2018? There were 706 responses. 28% said much more optimistic, 25% about the same, 24% slightly more optimistic, 13% slightly less optimistic, and 10% much less optimistic. And we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.